Last time, two times ago, we discussed the position of the Mordechai in Shmuel, quoted in the Ramah in Sifav, that in the hair braid story, Mordechai quotes the notion of Heine Revise, the Malkum Sakana. And we noted that in the context of hair, Malkum Sakana is not enough, because even if you would decide that something is Eino Makbid because of Sakana, it still doesn't help if we have Rov Seyar. But in theory, in a context in which we're not talking about Seyar but the rest of the body, Sakana in and of itself should be sufficient to render something Eino Makbid and not be a Chatzisa. So that formulation we have more clearly in a position of the Rash on the Mishnayis in the end of the Mikvos. The Rash is quoted in the Beis Yosef, parallel to Se'if Yud Aleph. The Rash there is going on the case of a chetz. So the Mishnah in the end of Mikvos, the very last Mishnah, which is the din we're going to see here in Sif Yud Aleph, tells us chetz chutachu ba'adam v'zman shehu nira chotzeitim eino nira tovel v'ochel b'truma. So if you have an arrow, or we shouldn't talk parallel, a splinter, that is tachov in a person's flesh. So if it is nira, it constitutes a chatzitza, and if not, it does not. So there's a parallel tosefta to this Mishnah. The Rashi quotes the tosefta in Mikvos. Hanichnas l'chitz birecho, Rabbi Omer eino chotzeitz, v'chachamim omer chotzeitz. So the Tosefta has a qualification that we don't have in the Mishnah here. The Tosefta says that this din, the distinction between Tachov and Eino Tachov, is only relevant if it's b'matechas, but if it's b'shel eitz, it is a chatzitza. So that you probably saw, if you haven't seen yet, you will. The whole discussion of the Beis Yosef, the relationship between that Tosefta and the Mishnah, and there's a whole tumult as to what the Beis Yosef actually meant, because the Beis Yosef is a bit confusing on Sifir Aleph. But be that as it may, the Tosefta has that distinction between Mateches and Eitz. Now, Mateches does not constitute a Chatzitza, but Eitz does constitute a Chatzitza. So if you have a metal arrow that goes into a person's skin, that metal arrow is not Chotzeitz, but if you have a wooden arrow, the wooden arrow is going to be Chotzeitz. So what is the distinction between a metal arrow and a wooden arrow? Why should there be a difference? So the Rash has two suggestions. Number one, v'shel matachas aili b'mayitvei mishel eitz, that if you have a metal object, the water is going to get around the metal object more easily than it would get around a wooden object. So if you have a metal object that's sticking into the skin, the water still may get underneath the metal object, but if you have a wooden object, the water is not going to get underneath the wooden object. That's why the latter would be a chatzitza. And what we're concerned about is the second answer of the Rash, inami, v'shal matachas ika sakana tvei, kishemotzia. That if you have a metal arrow that is in someone's skin, if you're going to remove it, that is going to pose a greater sakana than would be the case for a wooden arrow. And therefore, that is considered eino makdir. Again, Lashon of the Rash, v'shel matachas ika sakana tfei kishemotzio, v'davrish eino makbid eino chotzeitz. So because there is a greater level of sakana in removing a metal arrow, that is considered not to be a chatzitza, that is considered eino makbid. So this is just a clear formulation that you have in the Rishon, the Rash in the end of Mikvos, that a davar sheyesh bo sakana does not constitute a chatzitza because it is considered eino makbid. Okay, I'm going to come back to chetz, if not today, then next time. The last time we discussed the three or four cases that we have in the Gemara on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, and the Machlokes Rishonim as to whether those cases are only relevant L'Inyan Taros, or even relevant L'Inyan the Isser L'Baila as well. And we saw that in the formulation of Shulchan Aruch, Siv Zayin, Siv Ches, Siv Tes, there was no qualification. Those namers in the Gemara are presented as normative even for Issa Labayla, and the Shach raises the issue why the Mechaber here does not more explicitly acknowledge the other position in Rishonim and Gaonim, And the Shach concludes that while definitely l'chachila, we have to be machmir to treat all these matters as chatzitza b'di'eved, if a woman went to the mikveh with such an object and then was unable to redo the tefillah, there's what to be makel about. Okay, so now we're going to address some of these specific cases individually. So, Sif Zayin Liflif Shechutz La'ayin is Chotzei Tzafila Hulach, Liflif Sheba Ayin Eino Chotzeitz, V'imu Yavish Chotzeitz, V'hu Shehistel Lehorik. So, if you have some kind of crust in the eye, if it is outside of the eye, that would constitute a chatitza, even if it's lach. If it's in the eye, it is not chotzeitz if it is lach. The yavish is going to be chotzeitz regardless. Lach is going to be chotzeitz if it's outside of the eye, not if it is inside the eye. Okay. Not directly this halacha, but since this is where Shulchan Aruch discusses eyes, we'll just speak for a minute about contact lenses, which is one of the more contemporary applications. The discussion about whether contact lenses would pose a chatzitza b'di'eved, meaning Evan agrees with chachila, a woman should remove contact lenses before going to the mikveh. The question is, what is the status if a woman forgot to do so and then went to the mikveh with the contact lenses in her eye and realized it sometime after the fact, either right after she went to the mikveh or later that night or the next morning, that she forgot to remove the lens when she went to the mikveh. So the starting point of discussion for this is an issue discussed by slightly earlier Arponim, which is a glass eye. There was such a phenomena for people who are blind of having some kind of glass eye for cosmetic purposes to mask the fact that person was blind. So they would cover the eye with some kind of a glass eye. So the shaila that was asked to the Shol HaMeshiv, who I think may be the first to discuss this, Shol HaMeshiv Tinyana, Chela Gimel Simen Kuf Ches. You know, the Shol HaMeshiv is divided into Kama, Tinyanas, Lisa, etc. And within each volume, there are various Chalakim. So this is the second volume, the third Chalak. The pageant, the numbers of Tshuvas begin from Aleph, each Chalak within each volume. So this is Tinyana, Chalak, Gimel, Simen Kuches, the very last paragraph in the Tshuva. Tshuva addresses various Chatzitza issues. I'm sorry? Who are the Shol HaMeshiv? Yes, good. Okay. Rav Asher Weiss says often that he learned a lot about how to write a tshuva, or what a tshuva should be from reading the Shol HaMeshiv when he was young. Okay, so the Shol HaMeshiv addressed this question of the glass eye as to whether b'di'eved, if a woman went to the mikveh and forgot to remove this glass eye, would it constitute a chatzitza. Rav Avadya, in his analysis of the Shol HaMeshiv, thinks that the Shol HaMeshiv is talking even l'chachila, that's addressing the question as to whether a woman could even l'chachila go to the mikveh with this glass eye, but the strict presentation we're talking about, the shaila was a b'di'eved shaila. So essentially, there are two elements to the shaila. Number one, how do we view the eye as far as being a beis astarim, which we haven't discussed yet. We'll get to that later in the siman, so that's not our issue right now. And number two, whether it's considered to be eino makbid, it's definitely a miyut, small part of the body, but definitely a miyut. The question is it considered eino makbid? And the norm is to remove it at night, to remove it at regular intervals. Could you still argue that that's considered eino makbid for some reason? So Shol HaMeshiv makes two points. Number one, as far as the beis astarim, he says that this glass eye is eina mehudekes, it's not tightly fit, so the water could get underneath the glass eye. And since the water can get underneath the glass eye, it's considered raya l'biasmayim, and if it's raya l'biasmayim, it would not pose a problem at all, independent of how we define makdim. And number two, as far as makrid is concerned, meaning if it was that, just that, so l'chachila obviously you still have to you still have to remove it. What about, how do we address makbid? So he has the following interesting argument. That the definition of makbid is that something is bad for you, it is undesirable, it is a gnai, and that's why you remove it. So if something is undesirable, you remove it, you don't want it there. That's makbid. But if you do something that's lanoi, you do something to enhance your appearance, so you can't call that makbid. You're still removing it on a regular basis, but the reason you're removing it on a regular basis is either so that your eye shouldn't get harmed or the glass eye shouldn't get harmed. So that in and of itself shouldn't be considered a davar hamakbid. And even though it's painful to leave it in your eye all the time, so the reason you have to remove it is not only for the protection of the object, but because it would be painful to leave it in the whole time. Nevertheless, sometimes people are willing to forego some pain in order to enhance their appearance. So because ultimately this is for noi purposes, even though there may be some pain involved in keeping it in the eye, that's still considered eino makbid. So again, the Shulchan Aruch is suggesting that if it's something that's there to enhance your appearance, it's lanoi, it's not lagnai. And even though you remove it, the reason you remove it is either for its protection or you can't keep it there all the time, that's still considered to be eino chotz, eino makbid, and eino chotz.
During the first issue, so when the Shulchan Aruch,
yeah. Yes. That's why Rav Avadya is more inclined to say even lechachila. I mean, Rav Avadya, lemaisa lechachila should take it out, but he thinks the Shalom Eishiv would even work lechachila. If that's the chiddush of the Shalom Eishiv in terms of definition of makbid, Avi.
In terms of this being considered a sarim, does the water get in there or not?
So the Shalom Eishiv's claim is that the water will get underneath the glass. Meaning behind the glass.
So this is not even a kolaroi libido. This is not the water flushing through there.
It's well, it's still a kolaroi because it's considered roi libido as mayim. The water's not going to... Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Correct.
What does that have to do with
the base of star? The base of star meaning roi libido as mayim. So if it would be blocking the back of the eye, so that wouldn't be roi libido as mayim. Meaning if it's in the front of the eye, it's blocking the back of the eye, and the back of the eye is considered part of the base of the star, so it has to be right of the BS Mayim, you have to be able to get water in there. So then if water can't get through, that's not right of the BS Mayim.
The base of
the star needs to be right of the BS Mayim. Again, we haven't, I'm just mentioning that because that's part of the tshuva here, we haven't discussed base of star yet, we'll get to that later in the seminar. Okay, my issue here for the moment is more the definition of makbid. Okay. So Rav Moshe, in the tshuva that you may have seen, which I put on the Marmor Kom, Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Dalid, takes issue with the Shalom Eishiv's analysis. He thinks that, how can you argue, just because it's there lanoi, that in and of itself makes it eino makbid, lemaisa, you're moving it every night. So why is that any different than the classic tabas case? You have a tabas that you keep on your finger, it's also there lanoi, and you remove it when you need to knead or bake, right? So this should be no better than the classic case of tabas, the rivet that we discussed earlier. That's also lanoi, and you remove it because there are times that you need to take it out. But if you're going to be removing it on a regular basis, that already makes it makbid, even if it is lanoi. And here it's even worse, because the reason you're removing it is not only for its protection, but you're removing it because it bothers you. There's some sar. And if it's going to stay there forever, it's going to harm you. It's going to be there's going to be a negative effect on your eye or on your body if you keep him there 24 hours a day. So all these factors point to viewing this as Rav Moshe as a davar hamakbid. You're taking it out on a regular basis, you're doing so because if you leave it in, it's going to harm your body, and because it is painful. The emotion knowledge is that in theory, he says, this probably is not the case. In theory, if it was the case, that there's no concern that your body is going to get damaged. And there's no real tsar involved in keeping it in your body. And the only reason you have to remove it is because you have to switch it with another glass because it's bad for the glass. So then he says maybe that would be like a temporary filling, which we alluded to earlier, that our moshe is made by temporary filling, since you're just removing the temporary filling to replace it with a permanent filling, but that area is always going to be filled, so that's not considered to be makbid. So in theory, if the case was that you keep a glass eye on 24 hours a day, and you only remove it on occasion to replace it with another glass eye because it's bad for the glass, so then Rav Moshe could hear that that would be considered ein makbid. But short of that, in the reality that he's addressing, where there are reasons to remove it, either because it's tsar or because it damages the body, etc., so that would constitute a davar hamakbid. One second. I mean, nevertheless, Rav Moshe, bottom line, is makel about this glass eye for another reason. And Rav Moshe assumes, again, I'm just mentioning this now because we're talking about the tshuva, we'll address Beis HaSarmin in some context as we go further in the simon. Rav Moshe thinks that something in the Beis HaSarmin is only chotzeitz if it is somehow adhering because of a foreign substance. I mean, if you have something in the Beis HaSarmin that you stick in with some kind of glue or cement or some foreign substance, so then that would be considered ein aroi l'bias nayim. But if something you stick something in the eye without any other foreign substance causing it to adhere, and it just stays there because of natural adhesion, then that does not constitute a chatzitza or a chisarin in roi l'bias nayim in Hilchos Beis HaSarim. Okay, so his distinction is that if there is a foreign substance that's aiding the adhesion, that's where you have a problem Beis HaSarim. If it adheres naturally, then you don't have a problem in Beis HaSarim. And therefore Moshe says that when it comes to contact lenses as well, lichachila, obviously you have to remove it. But if a woman realizes after the fact that she didn't remove it, you know, she already came home, realized it's the next morning that she didn't remove it. So the Moshe thinks you don't need another tevila. Avi?
Yeah, so the Moshe ended up talking about Beis HaSarim, but really in the way that you formulated it,
mm-hmm.
he seems to be saying that if it were something which would never, it's a theoretical case, but it would never need to be removed,
right.
It would be removed if the glass will wear down.
Right.
He's not really relying on Beis HaSarim.
Well, no, in this particular case, that's not the reality. Right. Right. In theory, if there was such a mitzvah, so then you could argue that's ein makbid. That's a theoretical point.
So that would be relying on him for contact lenses?
No, he's relying on the fact that it's the Beis HaSarim, and it is not, it is adhering naturally, not because of some other substance.
But what about the contact lens of the Beis HaSarim? The eye itself is your regular eye,
right?
Just rests on that. It's still Beis HaSarim
there. The eye is Beis HaSarim.
The entire eye.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, in theory, the water, the chorus has to hit the eye, the white of the eye. The eyelid covers that, whatever. But the contact lens is not covering the Beis HaSarim.
It's in the Beis HaSarim. The water has to be right to go through the entire Beis HaSarim. We'll talk about Beis HaSarim later on. That's not my focus now, right. Avi. There may be other factors why that would come into that equation. We'll talk about that as we go on. Yeah.
As far as makbid goes, so mm-hmm. the reference to remove the tshuva, sorry, filling.
Yeah.
So if it's like non-daily contact,
mm-hmm.
If someone wears like 2 weeks at a time,
right.
So can you like, I don't know how far it goes for every motion, but like, who knows, like a tooth or it's not like at any moment I might have to take it out. Depending on a person wears a contact, would assume it's like,
you're talking about permanent contact. You're talking about a kind of
contact. People take it every
night. Okay. Rev Bosner has a tshuva. Shevet Levi Chelik Beis Simon Samasayim. Sheva Levi Chayla Beisim and Samasayin, which he raises another issue with context, which is our discussion last time about the din later in the Simen of a woman should not close her eyes too tightly when she goes to the mikvah. Right, the din in Sif Lamates, Lo Tatsimei Neha B'Yoser, which is one, the last name here in our Gemara on Samasayin Amad Aleph. So we know the last time the Machlokes we shown him, what does that mean? So Rashi understands seemingly that we're concerned about the kamatim or wrinkles outside the eye that are formed by either opening it too wide or closing it too tight, and that's going to constitute a chatzitza, potentially, or the pshat of the Meiri, that we're concerned about if you open the eye too wide. I'm sorry, if you close the eye too tight, then it's not going to be right with the esmai. Right? According to Rashi, the issue is external to the eye. According to Meiri, the issue is internal to the eye. Right? I'm confused. Okay. I'm looking at you. Sorry. I'm sorry?
Natural.
Okay. So Rav Avner thinks that lahalacha, we are more concerned about the first explanation, that if you close your eyes too tight, then that is a chisaron in ra'i l'bi'as mayim, if you close it unnaturally tight. And if a person has contact lenses in her eye, then she is going to be more inclined to close the eye more tightly. Is that anyone here wear contacts? Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that the case? No?
Yeah.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
What?
Barely.
What do you mean?
Keep your eyes open in the shower when you wear contacts.
Yeah.
You don't take them off when you go in the shower?
I'm definitely not conscious of, when I wear my contacts, I'm not more conscious of
at least on a lechachila level, Rav Avner is concerned that if you have the contact in your eye, then you may be inclined to close it tighter than the norm. So Rav Avner thinks that, again, lechachila, you have to remove it. Bidi Evan, if she already went home with her husband and realizes after the fact the next morning, then there's no need to repeat the tevila. Yeah.
So what's the offering? Is another reason why the tevila has to be removed?
Right. Another potential concern to throw into the equation.
So he would say that she just went home, but
if she went home but wasn't with her husband yet, so then probably she should go back to the mikveh if possible. Meaning, all these shailas that we're going to talk about, there's before you go to the mikveh, there's after you go down but you haven't left the building yet, there's when you come home, and realize when you got home, and then there's the next morning. So, in many situations, we would be much more inclined to be mekel if the shayla was the next morning, much more inclined to tell her go back to the mikvah if she's still there, and even if and then if she already got home, so then that's kind of the border of having to address on a case by case basis. Is the mikvah still open? What does it involve to go back? So that's the middle ground. Yeah.
If she had already gone home, is there any data that says that if that's the issue, she should try to go to mikvah again?
Yes.
It's only the next morning.
If it's the next morning and if she was already with her husband and she realizes the next morning, so there are situations there are cases in Hilchos Chatzitza where we may advise her to go back, but this, according to most poskim, is not one of them. Minchas Yitzchak may hold that even in that case he should go back, because he Minchas Yitzchak Chelek Vav Simin Pei Tes assumes it's not it is Mehudak, it's Lenoy, sorry, he assumes that if it's something that you're going to remove regularly, and he's worried about the Yatsima Sinayim and all the factors that we mentioned, she thinks that the tefillah is not going to even be the evidence. So it sounds like he would tell you to go back even the next morning. Rav Avadya writes here in actually before that the Badi Shulchan. Badi Shulchan in Sif Katan Reish Sarivav is unclear. He leaves it with the Tzarachi and Lahalacha to what extent you could be Mekel after the fact. His issue is defining whether it's considered Mehudik or not. Is it really can the water get behind the lens? So he's Mesupik whether you could be Mekel even B'di'evet. Rav Avadya assumes on page Kavav that next morning you definitely could be Mako. Rabbi Willig assumes that way as well. So it seems like the general consensus, to the extent that there's a consensus of the postman on this issue, is that next morning you don't have to go back. If you find out, if you realize that the mikveh, you should go back. And if it's not so inconvenient to go back even when you leave the mikveh, then probably advisable as well. Okay. So let's move on now to the next, or the previous din of the Gemara, the next din of Shulchan Aruch of Rivda de Kusilta. The Gemara had here again on Samech Rayin Amud Aleph. Amar Rami Bar Abba Hani Rivdi de Kusilta Atwa Sayomi Lachaitzi Mikan Ve'ela Chaitzi. So these Rivdi de Kusilta do not pose the problem of Chatzitza up to 3 days. Beyond 3 days, they do. What is Rivda de Kusilta? So again, Rashi here says, Darkan Shalmakav Shalakaz Vestam Mahalos Galad. So it sounds like it's a scab that is formed over the area where blood was let. So up to 3 days, Gildan Rach, so the skin over the area of the wound is still soft, the mechuber, and beyond 3 days, then it presumably is identified as a foreign substance. So one of the issues that Rishonim address here, which contributes to some of the confusion, both in terms of definition of terms and in terms of din, is what seems to be a stira between this Gemara and the Mishnayos in the end of Masechet Mikvos. So this issue is raised, among others, by the Ramban and the Rashba here in the Sugya. The Ramban is the Emsa Hadibur the Kashalan. Okay, so they're bothered. The Mishnah in Mikvos Perek has Mishnah Beis. There it says, Galad Shechutz Lamaka. So the scab that is external to a wound. Right, so Mishnah Beis says a scab that's external to a wound, glad shechutz lamaka, is chotzeitz. And then Mishnah Dalid, glad shealamaka, the scab that's on the wound, is not chotzeitz. So again, glad shechutz lamaka is chotzeitz, glad shealamaka is not chotzeitz. So our Gemara doesn't distinguish between chutz and al. And the Mishnah there doesn't distinguish between within 3 days and after 3 days. So the model of the simplest yishuv would be that somehow the Mishnah here, the Mishnah there, and our Gemara are talking about different mitzvahs, different cases. What does the Ramban say? The Ramban has two teirutzim. The Ramban here in our Sigah Samas Vayitam and Aleph. So the first Ramban writes, Glad Shalamaka Nami Mishum Haytaimahu Delo Avit Inish Lekalef Glad Makasa. That Glad Sha'al Hamaka, which the Mishnah there in the Mishnah in Mikvah says is Chotetz. Glad Shechutz L'Makom, which is not Chotzeitz. Why is it not Chotzeitz? Delo Avid Inish L'Kalif Glad Makoso, a person is not used to removing the scab from his mako. Mishem Dekasha L'Makom, because that is hard for the mako, that would be painful. Adiyavish U'Maklif Minavshay. So you wait until it gets dry, and then you remove it. And then it removes itself. And then you wait till it gets dry, and then it goes away on its own.
As
right. So that's talking about a scab that's external to the maka. And then the Ramban says that our Gemara that distinguishes between 3 days and after 3 days is talking about a glid besocha maka. And glid besocha maka would not doesn't have this level of pain in removing it. Then the second answer the Ramban distinguishes between lach and yavish. That if it's a lach, if it's still liquid, it doesn't constitute a chatzitza, which we'll see in other contexts later on in our siman. So what's relevant lahalacha that emerges from the first answer of the Ramban and the Rashba is this notion that if something is painful to remove, that the person is not going to remove this kind of a scab, he's just going to wait for it to heal itself and fall off, that that doesn't constitute a chatzitza because that's considered to be eino makdid. So in the Lashon Ramban, I guess it's not entirely clear. Again, the Lashon is lo avin inish lith kalif glad makaso mishum de kasha lemaka. Does kasha lemaka mean it's going to be painful or it's going to hamper the healing process? Right. In the Lashon Ramban, it's not bachreach. It's not bachreach either way. The Ramban is assumed by later authorities to mean that if there's sar involved, then that's not considered to be makkah. I mean, that seems to be the Beis Yosef quotes from the Mordechai and Shavuos, and quotes from the Tshuva Sari, something similar. The Mordechai in Shavuos is in Siman Tav Shen Memches. He quotes from the Tshuva Sari that such a scab. Let's see if he. I don't remember if his Lashon actually has Tsar. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
He does say Tsar. Right, so I guess it's clear in the Re. Anyone see it? Afilu b'yitzdarim yasir aglad me'al gabi mako ababuos shchin de'ein daita lahasir ata v'karui eino makdiv. So nikar adin, that's considered eino makdiv if there is tsar. Right, so I guess even though in the Ramban it's not the favorite that the issue is tsar, it is in the Tshuva Sari and the Mordechai. But nevertheless, mikal makam regilusu lahasir akol. That nevertheless, even though Mikar Adin, if there's tsar in removing it, it doesn't constitute a chasifas eino makdiv. Nevertheless, the minhag is to remove everything. Oh, shetamtin shetisrape, or to wait for it to heal. Vetucha lahasir, then it could be removed easily. So, in the Tshuva Sari, Mikar Adin, if there's tsar, it doesn't constitute a chasifas, but nevertheless, the minhag developed to wait for it to fall off or to heal. Or to remove it. Okay. The Taz here, in Sifat Nidalet, however, quotes from the Sar Mikotzi, Hagos Marshal, quoting from the Sar Mikotzi, the Bach has this as well. It sounds more like he was concerned on an Ikaridin level of the potential Chatzitza problem of a scab, even if it would be painful to remove. The Tazim Sivkat and Yudal quotes that from the Sagos Marshal, that the wife of might have been Maruch or Zerua, Haisa Tzvicha Lama Lefanov Aruma Shaya Roa Shalah Haya Grav Aleh Shalah Haya Mamin La Shaisa Mesira Shaisa Nara Vaya Koiv La Lechein Asa Sar Mikotzi Leishta. So later, Acharon say it means that after the mikveh, he inspected them, her, to make sure that there are no scabs that wouldn't have been removed. So that sounds like a more of a Nikar Adin concern, possibly, that even if there is tsar removing it, it might still constitute a chatzitza, be considered makdid. That itself is a discussion in Acharonim. Within this range between the minhag recorded in the Mordechai of l'chachila b'machmir to remove such scabs and the practice of the Sar Mikutzi and Maruch HaZerua, what's a chumra and what's, are they holding a chumra, are they holding the Ikar Adin? So the Sidrei Tara here in Sifkat and Kaf Gimel assumes that all this was merely a chumrah. What are the svaras here? So the Tzemach Tzedek Lubavitch, Yerodeya Simen Kuf Nun Ches Osvav. Tzemach Tzedek Yerodeya Simen Kuf Nun Ches Osvav suggests that those who are machmir on the shayla of the scabs where there's tsar to remove them might have been assuming that it's analogous to the ring. But just like a ring, if you know for a fact you're going to be removing it in a reasonable amount of time, that may constitute a chatzitza. So through here, you know that even though at the moment it's slightly painful, you are going to be removing the scab in the very near future, and therefore you should be a machmer that we're concerned, at least l'chumra, that may be considered a davar hamakdik. And those that argue may hold that at the time that you're going to remove it, it's no longer the same object. Right now it's a painful scab. Then when it heals, it's not going to be a painful scab anymore. It changes its identity. So maybe that is enough of a change to render it a different object, and the fact that you will remove it later has no bearing on our definition of makbid right now. He doesn't like that for us so much, but that's what the Tzemach Tzedek suggests to explain the svaris here in either direction. Chuvas Rebbe Kiv Eger, Kama Simen Samech, paragraph beginning with that. Chuvas Rebbe Kiv Eger Simen Samech assumes, at least within some of the Rishonim here, he presents this with Machlokas, Smag and Smak, that maybe this concern is indeed a Me'ikar Adin consideration. Yoni. Well, the Gemara has a distinction between 3 days. You have to figure out what the case is.
The Ravitz is the reason why it says 3 days are not
right.
Before the 3 days, you're not machted, even though it's not considered a chutz, even though you know that you're going to be machted 3 days from now because it's an object. Doesn't that sound clearly like that's far?
Yeah, okay, I hear. Good. It sounds like it didn't like that far either.
But it sounds like...
What? It sounds like... He didn't like the idea that it changes identity, therefore it's a different object. Yeah.
It's dangerous, it's painful, I don't want to take it off, so that's like it's not makbid.
Because lemaisa, I'm not going to take it off, because it's painful, that's ain't a makbid. Just like sakana.
I guess maybe this is a tiny answer, meaning you generally say makbid doesn't mean that I want to take it off now, but if there's any ever a given point that I would take it off,
right.
That means makbid. So even that...
Right.
To
but here it's so far removed from your consciousness because of the tsar now that we don't take into consideration that fact. The Kivager says something a little bit differently, meaning to explain if you're going to be machmir here, let's say the tsar mikutzi. So what's the difference between tsar and sakana? By sakana, there seems to be broad consensus that if you don't remove something because sakana, that's considered a no machmir. And if you're not removing because of tsar, so that's an issue here, where some Rishonim seem to have held, that is considered makbid. So why would you distinguish between sakana and tsar? Right? If you're going to say that, well, sakana is definitely because of akpada. The question is, why did you say the same notion by sakana is considered eino makbid because, bottom line, you're not removing it. Why aren't you removing it? It's dangerous. Right? So why wouldn't you say the same thing by tsar? Why would the tsar mikutzi argue by tsar? And why by tsar would you say, even though I'm not removing it now because it's painful, it's still considered makbid?
There's a point that you will.
So you could say there's a point that you will. Although we're looking at the by tsakan also, it's theoretically possible there may be a point that you will. So Gevager sounds like he makes the following distinction, and that's Shuvah Simon Samach, that even by tsar, some people might say, okay, it's painful to remove it all at once, but I'm going to remove a little now, and a little in an hour, and a little in an hour, and then if you move little by little, you're going to get it all off. So that which is preventing you from removing it, b'makom tsar, is not as strong as that which is preventing you from removing it, b'makom sakana. When it comes to tsar, so I can remove a little now, and a little later, and that'll minimize the tsar, so it's not really such a big deal. Mereshith Moshe says a little bit differently, Reshus Moshe Simon Kufya Tess, that people have different tolerance levels for tsar. factors. What may be tsar for one person may not be tsar for another person. And sometimes there may be a situation where you're going to bite the bullet, and even if it's painful, you want to remove it because you're concerned about your appearance or whatever the reason may be. Even if it is painful, you're going to remove it. If there's a mamish sakana, by removing it, you're going to kill yourself. So no reasonable person is going to take that risk. And it's only tsar, so tsar is somewhat more subjective. Yeah.
So
you're asking, even if let's say rove women are not makbid, and she's not makbid this. So anyway, you slice it, we're not concerned about the miyad who are not here who may be makbid. So a difference doesn't make if there may be some people who have a higher threshold for pain, that's still considered ain't a makbid. So as far as that's far, if this person herself may remove it, I mean, the question is why do we say categorically that tsar is enough of a reason to render something inimakri? But tsar categorically is not enough of a reason to render something inimakri because some people themselves may remove it even if it is painful. Not other people, but the person herself. That's why we can't categorically say that tsar makes it inimakri. I think that's what he was saying. Okay.
Ask us now.
Okay, just one more. Bottom line, Lalacha, I think most poskim, I shouldn't say most. In the before Shamir's book here, I was looking before, he suggests that if it's possible to remove it without causing it to bleed or causing pain, then you should. I think Rabbi Willig would say that don't try to. You may not think that you're going to cause bleeding or pain, but you might end up doing it. So, generally speaking, we assume that if there is a situation of tsar that is enough to render something eino makbid. So, lemaisa, if you have a scab that's not about to come off in 10 seconds, I think Poskim would say that you could leave it and not be overly concerned as the Sar Mikotzi may have been. We'll talk a little bit more about this next time, and then we'll go on to Riti and Sifyud, and Chetz in Sifyud Aleph. And then we'll move on to Lach and Yavesh, and dyes, and then fingernails. Okay.